Hey, good evening. Welcome to the Conventional Sniper Podcast. I'm your shooter, Justin Coletti. Tonight with us, we have another former sniper, Rob. He's been on the podcast before, and he'll be your spotter. So, Rob, welcome back to the podcast, man.
Thanks. Love being here.
It's been a hot minute since we've had you on the podcast.
Yeah, it has.
You've been hiding out in your hide side, haven't you?
It's all about selecting the right one.
So moving forward, I guess it's just good to have you. It's good to have good, like-minded dudes with the podcast, and I just appreciate you being on. So anyway, let's move forward to the S2 brief, yeah? All right, so first things first is this is definitely an international community. There are multiple snipers from multiple armies, and some of those guys have a lot of skill sets. They have passion for this job because it's really not a skill set. It's a job because there's so much that goes into this. But one thing I want to say is I want to say thank you to the British Army. They sent us two badges, one for, I guess, their utility uniform, as you would say, right?
Yeah.
Your combat uniform.
Our version of the BDUs.
Yeah, your combat uniform, and also a dress badge that would go in your dress uniform. So it's two cross rifles, or cross bolt action rifles is what I should say, with an S above it and a wreath around it. And I just want to say thanks to those guys. It's awfully nice to hear that, or to know that other guys, other snipers from other communities are listening and appreciating the information we're putting out. And don't worry, we've got some stuff coming for you. Also, I want to say a quick special thank you to the guys in 2nd Brigade, 101st Airborne at Fort Campbell, Kentucky. I had a sniper section sergeant reach out to us and discuss about he's having some issues with being able to present himself capable of doing stuff. And some of these guys are at a slight disadvantage because there's new snipers within the community and they just want to be able to help sync and coordinate together. And they reached out to us and said, hey, how do we kind of put our X's and O's in the right spots and play a little tic-tac-toe? So I appreciated those guys reaching out. And then one last thing with the Intel brief is that if you look on our Instagram page, there's an Amazon link at the top that will link you to a book on Amazon written by Hesketh Pritchard, and I probably slaughtered his name in a little bit there, but he's a British officer in World War I, and this book contains all of his notes and scientific findings and how to select and train snipers. I think it's a good book to read into, some basic knowledge, and if you look at over the course of history, which we'll cover this in another podcast, but the methods, the techniques, and the procedures, the SOPs, it's kind of repeated throughout history. And I think starting at the World War I level and learning that is probably a good place to start. One thing snipers are known for is keeping up with their history. So, again, thank you. And if you buy that book, a little bit of that money from the book helps to go to support the podcast now. And that will enable us to come around to conventional units and help them link up with their commanders. Because, which is what this podcast is going to be about, is how do you sell yourself to a commander? And I'm sure, Rob, you can contest to this. You hear all the time that they just don't get how to use snipers. Commanders don't get it.
Yeah, we're going to go into a bit more depth on this. It's not just that they don't know how.
I mean, they may not actually know how.
Well, it's not just that. There's other determining factors, which we're going to get into in here in just a minute. So bear with us, and we'll clear some of this stuff up.
So one thing, and you hear it a lot amongst the community, is be an asset, not a liability. And you have to understand that the commander has to really be briefed on what the sniper team's capabilities are. You have to be integrated into the mission planning, okay? And you know, I'll just give you an example that a lot of that stuff comes from the S2 or the S3 shops, the operations or the intelligence shops. You know, some of the things they're going to want to know are, I'll just give you an example. If you're going to conduct a reconnaissance mission, you need to select a hide site, okay? Some of those things that they're going to want to know are, how are you going to pull security? What's the sustainability of that hide site? And what are you going to do if your hide site's compromised? And how are they going to get you out if that stuff happens? Say you're in an urban environment. And your hide site gets compromised. Do you think they're going to drop a bomb next to you and cover while you're getting out? Can't do that. You're too close to the enemy, potentially. Those are things you really have to consider when you're trying to say, hey, you don't know how to use us. It's really not, you don't know how to use us. It's more of, you don't necessarily know the right questions to ask and how to correctly plan. So I guess let's go over like some hindsight criteria. Let's say I'm gonna watch. I'm gonna watch for an enemy commander in the area, and I want to pick a building to stage my dudes in for a few days. And
okay, so
what are some things like Rob? What was one thing you did?
So the first thing that typically comes down is you're gonna have some intel of either a high value asset, high value target in that area that either needs to be monitored, eliminated.
More information needs to be found out.
Information needs to be got. Remember, our job isn't just to put bullets on brains. It's reconnaissance as well. So we need to be able to do that. And good reconnaissance starts with good intel. Getting with your S2, your intel branch, if you're a different military, I don't know what your name for it would be, but get with your intel guys and ask them questions. You are their right hand, period. Everything that you do goes in and out of that office. When you come back from missions, the first place you go should be S2. You don't brush your teeth, you don't get a hoagie, you don't hit the chow hall, you don't turn on some movies, you go straight to S2 and do a dump.
If anything, you should probably drop your gear at the door of S2 and walk in. That's about it.
That's as soon as you come out of the mission, that's where you're going to S2 to give them dump. Before you go out on missions, not only should you be getting with S2 to
get the intel update,
get the information to build your mission plan, but also before you head out, confirm that there have been no updated changes. Don't just assume that everything is as it was planned 3 days ago. Current information.
Patterns of life change at the target objective, or even just walking out with a friendly unit, the situation in the area could change.
New missions in the area. You may have forces moving through the area that 3 days ago they didn't plan on having a log pack pushed through. There's an infinite number of ways for somebody to throw a wrench in your plans, and all you have to do is show up, grab a cup of coffee, and talk, and clear up all of these problems.
Not to mention that makes you an asset now, not a liability, because you know the latest update. And you can say, yep, this mission is still a go. There's nothing we have to potentially worry about any more than the things we've already had to worry about. It deconflicts security concerns or OPSEC concerns, because you could have an infill, a conventional platoon move through, and they could have stirred up the patterns of life in there. You know, you could have had the enemy move out of the area, and now you're going to go into an area where, guess what, the enemy's no longer there, because they've had intel that that target has moved someplace else to avoid the conventional platoons inadvertently pushing them out of the area. Excuse me.
Yeah, so all of these are exactly that. They're just snafus that happen that we need to account for with the latest and greatest intel. By going to the S2, talking to them on a daily basis, you develop a rapport, you get seen, they start coming to you. You're going to be friends with these people. You're going to start coming to you. Start taking them to the range when you're back in garrison. Grab up. I used to love taking an S1 clerk over to the range. I'd put him behind the 50. He'd nail a target at 700. He'd feel like the greatest shooter in the world. And when I had to get my frickin' whatever administrative work done, it was done. I went to the front of the line. Same works with S2. Same works with S3. Bring these people in, make personal relationships with these people, and they will care for you.
They're only going to make your life easier instead of harder. You know, work smarter instead of harder. Let the army help you do your job.
And they will preach for you, too. So what happens is you go into S2, you got that good relationship. Now, when you're gone, brigade commander is going to come down. Battalion commander, rather, is going to come down and he's going to say, hey, what's going on lately? Oh, well, the snipers just did this, or the snipers did that. They're selling you. It's easy to talk yourself up, but it's more effective with third party talk up. So you get the S2 to talk good things about you. And you follow that up with having good organization, planning, and being able to articulate things. Once they're in a listening mood, you'll have longer to explain these things.
And that doesn't mean you should take all day. Be precise.
No, but what happens, you get more time to explain your battle plan. You get to describe exactly how things are going, your capabilities, and then you'll be able to say, okay, you see, Commander, I'm not the liability that you thought I was. I am the asset that you have not
fully
used to its greatest potential as of yet. So we want to deconflict that. A lot of that is just interpersonal relationships. It's getting out there and shaking hands and kissing babies and all of that stuff that doesn't sound like it's important, but it's critical.
So speaking of critical, one thing that I learned about planning and critical considerations is there really isn't a pre-hindsight selection checklist.
Not that I'm aware of, no.
What is my, I don't want to say my 5 W's, my who, what, when, where, and why of what hindsight I'm going to select. But I think one thing that people really undervalue is the close target reconnaissance capability of selecting a hindsight. So, and you don't necessarily have to do it.
So I know what close reconnaissance is.
Well, let me go back to what
tell me, Justin, what exactly is that close reconnaissance that you're talking about?
So, for example, let's say I have building one, and I want to potentially put a hindsight in building one. But what I don't want to do is I don't want to send my snipers out there to look at it. I want to do either, I want to get eyes on it myself, or I need someone else to get eyes on it. So what I'm going to do is either send a sniper that looks like a regular rifleman. He's going to embed with a regular platoon, and we're going to walk past the building that I think is a good hindsight location.
Yep.
Because the first thing I'm going to do is I'm going to look on a digital map, and I'm going to go, this building looks like it has some good oversight. And then I'm going to look at the topographical map, and I'm going to look at certain elevation points within the village. And I go, well, these possible locations look good. I need to have eyes on, because it's always different on the ground versus what you see on the map. And you can ask the Air Force how that worked out for them in the invasion of Afghanistan.
Well, when you're doing these soft knocks, it's easy for
a
quote-unquote rifleman that's a sniper in disguise to go in with the platoon or the squad, take a few discreet pictures from outside the windows, do a floor plan, and then walk out.
Do a building sketch.
Yeah, nobody thinks anything of this if you're very discreet, and then a month later when you show up, you've got the raw data that you need.
Right. And one thing that it also gives you when you do this close target reconnaissance is it gives you the census and the demographic information of the population like around that hide site. If you go to this building and it's, say on your digital maps, it just looks like a building downtown, but you go downtown and it's the town hall, like, all right, clearly you're going to have a lot of people coming in and out of that building that are going to be probably of military age, you know, moving in about putting their plans in for their building projects or whatever else.
It could be an improvised hospital for all you know, and you can't use that site to begin with.
It could be a school. Last thing you want to do is be hanging out at a school, right? So you need to go and do that close target reconnaissance. The other thing is it confirms the grid location because digital products are made by computers and it can be off. You need to go down there and physically see that this building is where it is. Because things get updated. That building could have gotten demolished by construction a week ago, and your maps don't show it. So you need to physically see if that's the correct location the building's there. And the other thing while you're there is that actually allows you to observe your fields of fire. What are your left and right limits? How far right can you shoot? How far left can you shoot? How far out forward of your positions can you shoot? And the other thing it tells you is, how do you get in and out of the building?
Yeah,
those one-dimensional maps from above don't tell you where the doors are.
No, and these are all things that just quick digital camera, take it up, hit a pic, move on to the next building. Great intel just off of those things that you can go back later.
And that just confirms more of your blueprint stuff. You know, windows, there's no windows on the second floor. There's only windows on the first floor because it's a split entry house. And, you know, whatever. It allows you to figure out where windows are, where the doors are. Hey, there's a back porch on this building that has a sliding glass door, but doesn't have stairs to get down from the porch, and it only has a door on the front. So obviously, you want an infill, a primary route, and an alternate route, and you want an exfill, primary, alternate. You have two ways to get in and out, and two ways, yeah, just two ways in and out, front door, back door, right? Pretty simple. You know, you could be taking shots from the front, and obviously you want to go out the back. Getting shot from the back, you obviously want to go out the front. So the other thing is it allows you to figure out if there are alternate positions near that house. In case from the time that you looked at it to the time that you do the mission, you have an alternate location to go to. Or if you're compromised, you can fall back or move to another position. You're not just like running around crazy through the streets thinking this is Mogadishu and you're going to get in a crazy gunfight. You're there, max 7 to 9 man team. Your job is not to get in major gunfights. That's how you get killed. So, like, you got to think about this compromised situation or those alternate positions. Whether just, hey, the hindsight's no good anymore because the building got demolished, we're going to go to this position. Or, hey, we've been compromised due to trying to come through the front door and flush us out. We need to go to a safe secondary location. And like you've been talking about all along, Rob, you got to take photos. You can have all the satellite imagery you want, but you're going to miss little details.
And honestly, if you don't have the ability to send those photos while you're in a hide site, you're really taking things away. So we used to be able to do this, and this is years and years and years ago.
In a carrier pigeon?
Yeah.
With a pencil drawing?
Yeah, well, our supplies showed up on a slug, so it took longer.
Hey, you know, man, dude, you know, I'm sorry that I was born after you, but I'm just saying.
No, no, just taking pictures and using a SATCOM radio and sending them to the talk. Something as simple as that. And that's part of getting into more of a technical aspect of your job of how to do things. But all of these can be leveraged so beautifully that we really need to look at thinking about these.
So, you know, with these photos, and I think there's some other things that you don't really consider, and it might fall under a little bit more of the demographic information or the terrain information, but I imagine you're not going to be infilling during the day, especially with a bunch of long guns and radio equipment. Infilling the day is probably not the best idea. Not saying that it can't work, but it's probably not the best idea. So one thing you need to keep an eye on are where are the power lines? Where are the street lights?
Street lights. Oh, God.
Or what about businesses next to your hide site? Is there a farmer's market next to your hide site that wasn't on the map?
Like, a 24-hour 7-Eleven. Yeah,
what about a 24-hour 7-Eleven? You imagine, like, hey, man, I'm going to go hang out in Joe Schmo's over here.
Right,
hey.
I'm going to go smoke this guy and get a churro. Yeah. You need something.
I'm going to go to Red Bull after. Like, halfway through your hide site, you're like, dude, I'm so dehydrated right now. How are you dehydrated? I took all the Red Bulls from the container out back. Like, great, now you're going to have to pee a lot. You know, so you need to think about these things. You need to put this down on a checklist. So if we recap, close target reconnaissance is the first step. Let's just go check it out and see if the building's even there and what it looks like. Is it a wooden building? What is the building made out of? Is the building made out of mud and clay? Is it made out of concrete, made out of brick? Is it an industrial warehouse? And it's got, like, wrapping on the outside. What's the buildings that you just put, like, just the big beams up and you wrap, like, white material on the outside?
Oh, you're talking about the circus tent looking things.
Yeah, what if it's one of those by mistake, or it's just a big facility warehouse with like a white thing wrapped around it? I forget what they're called.
All of this is, it really comes down to cover versus concealment, ballistic properties. I mean, you can get very technical with all this, but
the other thing too is what type of furniture is going to be in this building? If it's a warehouse, probably not going to find a couch. If it's a house, you're probably not going to find a forklift in there. You know?
Yeah. So all of these things, but a checklist. I want a checklist. What would you do for a checklist?
And then, yeah, so to recap again, go check the building out if you think it's a possibly good building. Then you figure out the population around the building, what type of building is it, you note the grid location, and you check out your fields of fire. Where can I shoot? Where can I not shoot? Then you look at, how do I get in? How do I get out? And then you go check in the building, if you can, and you begin to draw what the building looks like, either in your mind, because that's what we do Kim's Games for, or you jot it down on a piece of paper. It's, oh, you know, it's a good point. Is you got to measure the distances between walls. Like how big actually is this building? Is it like a tiny home? Is it a trailer by mistake? Is it a double wide trailer? You need to know about just not just the demographic of people nearby, but the building itself. So again, infill, exfill, floor plans. And then again, the buildings around it, secondary locations, compromised locations, et cetera, et cetera. And then take pictures of the building.
Yeah. Can't say enough about pictures. It's 1,000 words. Pictures worth 1,000 words. So go ahead, you take all these pictures. Then the next thing on my checklist that I would look at would be like civilian considerations. This is where we would be talking back to the power lines, the roads, the business hours. So getting that full understanding of the immediate and surrounding area is how you select a hide site. You don't just go in, look around, and say, yeah, this is good. No, it's way more complicated.
This also bring up, like, what uniform do you need to bring? And what equipment are you going to need inside of that building?
Mm-hmm.
Are you going to go in a building and wear a ghillie suit? Probably not. Yeah. I'm not going to need a ghillie suit. Are you going to bring, like, some urban hide materials? Maybe something mm-hmm. to screen, no, that's part screen of your, thermals or that's things
like that?
That's part
of your mission planning. That's getting the information to know what equipment you need. Everybody's familiar with, or everybody in the U.S. military, I would hope, would be familiar with the 5 paragraphs of an op order. Snipers have to look at it a little bit more in depth, I would say, than just the first 5 paragraphs of the op order. There's a lot of little things in there that don't specifically fall into categories in your standard 5 paragraph op order. But don't be afraid to create your own section-specific paragraph op order. And I didn't say 5 paragraph op order. You're going to have to throw some things in there sometimes, and that's great. You've got your 5 paragraphs. You can brief it to the commanders. Everybody understands it. Officers are so used to hearing 5 paragraph op orders. It's ingrained in them.
Which is really just the 5 W's, the who, when, where, and why.
Yeah.
It's just putting in, it allows you to add more detail into it. But, which is exactly what you need to do. You need to add more details because your job is specific that 5 paragraphs is not going to give you all you need to know.
Well, each member of your team also has very important things that they need to be doing and covering down. You know, this isn't a platoon that has 30 people. And really only 4 people need to, like, really know the op order. No. This is, you have 3 people in your team, and everybody needs to know everything inside and out of not only the primary op order of the who, what, when, where, and why, but you need to get into that bag of Skittles and find all the colors, too. You got to get in that thing.
Which, I mean, the other thing I think people forget is your supply sustainability. How long can I maintain myself in that location with the supplies that I have versus the weight that I have, which helps with your, if you're compromised, what happens?
And, like, and
if if you've set up all this stuff in there and you get compromised, you think you're going to pack up your gypsy camp in 10 seconds and get out of there?
No. And some of that's just like resupply. Where do you, you know, an infantry platoon rolling up in Humvees is going to have, I don't know. I used to keep an ammo can full of full magazines just in case we got in a firefight. It's not part of the packing list, but I always had my own ammo resupply.
Because the Humvees can carry the weight.
Yeah, when I'm in a hide site, I can't just be like, oh, hey, where's my extra 30 magazines? No, you're done. What you brought is what you got.
Yeah. So, I mean, all these things are a huge, huge consideration. So you can't just expect that they just don't know how to use you. You got to go ask the right questions. If you tear through some of the manuals and you read through some of the stuff, you're really going to pull out the meat and potatoes of it. Just like you do, you know, no different than you do with an op order, right?
Any manual that I've ever come across is got a lot of fluff that's used for just writing purposes. It's putting it together. I like things in bullet format personally. But you need to digest these TCs, FMs, TMs down to the meat and potatoes that actually matter to you.
Which, I mean, you know, that being said, we've started working on digesting this down a little bit for you. So eventually we'll put up something that you can go and click on and download or, you know, buy for a few bucks here and there. And it will almost be like a Ranger handbook for the sniper. It'll be how do you take it from the sniper section leader's level and push that further up into battalion or brigade to drive that connection, and you'll know what you're expected to deliver to the battalion in order for them to adjust their mission or coordinate their mission, and then you'll know what's expected for them to deliver to you so that you can work your portion of the mission, the sniper portion, to enable them to complete their mission. Like, this isn't just, oh, I'm a sniper, I have my Bravo 4. Going to sniper school, like I've said in the very beginning of this podcast, when I first started, that this is a lifelong obsession that you will now be part of, and you cannot just go bend bullets in the air and think that someone's going to trust you anymore. Yes, you have to train to bend bullets on command. And if you look at history, you've got 3-second exposures. The 3 to 5 seconds in the infantry is because you're fat and slow and you have all this gear on you, and it's kind of difficult to get up and down with 150 pounds of gear. But some of the people we've been fighting in these recent wars are not carrying 150 pounds of gear.
They're wearing pajamas and AKs.
Yeah, and or a dress or something crazy like that. You know, you've got 3 seconds. So if you can make a snap 3-second engagement process out to 600 yards and a moving target at full sprint, I'd say you need to, if you can't rather, you need to begin training for that. And we'll probably in the next coming months or so help you develop a training program. That being said, if you tear through the TC, it just gives you the gunnery tables. But the gunnery tables, they're a great starting point, and they're a great way for a conventional unit to begin to prioritize where to train. But what about your commander's expectations? Does your commander expect you to take snapshots at 800 versus 600? Well, how do you get the land to do that? You need to figure out how to build your training mission around what your commander expects, which is his intent, or her intent, rather. So these are all huge things in that you got to come up with a checklist for things that a normal infantry unit's not going to have, such as hindsight. And, you know, actually a cool story to go back to working with, like, S1 shops and stuff like that. When we were doing stick lanes, we had a couple S1 clerks in the back of 113, which is an armored personnel carrier.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you had moved on, you gotten promoted at that point, which I'm pretty sure, but we were in Fort Riley somewhere doing some stuff, and an old squad leader of mine had taught me how to do false insertions out of the back of armored vehicles, specifically like tank platforms. And I know some mechanized guy is going to get really upset that I just called an armored personnel carrier, Bradley type, a tank. It's got tracks, it works like a tank, it skid steers, it's got armor and a big gun on there.
It's a tank.
That's a tank, right? And if you're a tanker and you're upset that I'm calling a tank, it's still a tank.
It's a tank.
Anyway, so the idea is that the Bradley or the APC slows down like 10 miles an hour, right? And you pop the vehicle into neutral and you rev the engine, drop the ramp while it's still moving, and you and the other snipers run out of the back of the vehicle at 10 miles an hour. Because, A, they can't hear the ramp dropping or coming up, but then you keep the ramp down for another 500 meters or so to get, like, that gets max 500 meters.
That's gonna say that's.
I need to be able to get away from that large ding when that ramp closes doors, because that's almost as loud as the engine sometimes. And even if it's revved,
it's
your engine's gonna run, or your vehicle's gonna run out of momentum. So you need to be able to get away from me.
Yeah, it's definitely something you want to practice, but it's definitely something you got to be careful with, because leaving the back hatch of a tank open. Yeah, I said it. It's a good way to catch an RPG.
Right, but you're also going to expose the team, because the decibels of that tank are drowning out me running into the wood line and smashing through the woods and trying to get into a good cover concealed position and remain there until the tank goes away. So anyway, so we're doing this, right? And me and another sniper in there, and we rolled out of the back of that APC. And a couple of days later, when we came back in, those S1 clerks were like, that was the coolest insertion I've ever seen. And by the way, here's your DA-31 from the commander. It was at the bottom of the pile. if you keep bringing us on cool stuff like that.
Every time. That's awesome. I had no problems. I cannot stress to you enough, bring out your soft skill guys, gals.
Just to watch sometimes.
Attack helicopters.
Yep.
Whatever. Bring them out to do some training. It's...
Bring your medics, because your medics are probably going to go with you on a mission, because let's be honest, some of you snipers are not an EMT, and I know one of you is going to put a tourniquet around the other dude's neck at some point, so...
I've wanted to put a tourniquet around somebody's neck before.
That's because you're weird and not an EMT. Anyway, you just take those dudes out when you're in the garrison and see how you can incorporate them into your mission. If you begin, and, you know, to be honest with you, I don't know why sniper sections don't select a medic.
There's limitations. There's
if you go to take a medic on a mission with you, if I had the choice, I'd go
select it's more a medic. Yeah, it's just more of an MTO issue. It's getting him to school. I mean, it's you are authorized to have 11 Bravos in that section trying to pick up a medic, and I couldn't tell you off the top of my head what that MOS is.
68 whiskey.
Trying to pull a 68 whiskey into an 11 Bravo position, that ends up being part of MTO issues.
It becomes, but the scout section is going to have a medic attached to it. That medic should be selected, not just, hey,
getting your medic one trained,
go to scouts.
Getting one trained is one thing, and having him as your go-to, yes, but having one permanently assigned, I see the benefit of it. However, I see the logistical problems in the way that units are manned by HRC preventing a lot of that. So,
for those of you who don't know, HRC is Human Resources Command.
Yes.
It's just the organization that I'm pretty sure doesn't know how to work, and they just put people in slots. They just do manning, basically.
Yeah. So this isn't a class on any of that. The point is that bring your soft skill guys in, get them some training. They enjoy it. They help you out in the long run. S2 is like your greatest friend. After that, I would probably put they're the ones going to keep you alive.
Help keep you alive.
Yeah, S1 is really good. I really do like to bring the supplies NCOs out because, you know, I like getting gear. And they have access to it.
You kind of always wear a gear whore.
I'm not going to lie. I couldn't, I couldn't get enough.
I mean, some gear works and then others just is a bag full of crap.
Do you know how many chem lights I can go stand out in a wood line with and dance for you?
No, and I don't. So, moving on. Anyway, look, hey, I think that's enough for the podcast tonight. I think it's a quick 30-minute one. I think it's enough time for you to generate some curiosity about how to create some of these checklists and really formulate the idea that it's not about that they don't know how to use you. It's you don't, and I don't mean to put it on you personally, but it's really the community doesn't know how to sell themselves, how to make themselves an asset and not a liability. Commanders look at liability. What is the percentage of casualties expected in combat? You don't want to be that expected casualty in combat. You have to do your due diligence to come up with a checklist to save your own hide on paper.
From
that being said, things change in the environment.
And you have to look at things from both sides. You know, when I do interdictions and go doing sector sketches, it's not only from my point of view, it's from the point of view of the enemy. Well, it also works for allies. I got to know what the commander's point of view is. His point of view, just without any information, is I've got two PFCs, an E5, and an E6 telling me that they're good to go. They can go downrange, hide in a freaking tuna can for 3 days with no assets. That doesn't brief well. You have to sell it. Yes, you are a PFC's and an E5 going out on a mission, but you're not.
Your SF dudes
go out as E6s. So it's not a big push just to consider that. You have to put yourself in the understanding that you are a higher level of soldier. They see 11 Bravo, E3,
Sniper.
10,000 miles away from support, automatic no. That's how they see it.
But so how if you have all that, if no. you have all the checks and balances and you've done all your pre-mission checklists and you've coordinated with them and you've built up that reputation that you've done it before mm-hmm. in training, it will translate over to real combat operations. And like I said before, things can change. And that's okay. You just have to have a basic idea of how you think you will adapt to that change. It's better to rehearse it, talk about it, try it out. If it doesn't work, well, hey, adapt on the fly. And I think...
What would you want to know if one of your soldiers came to you with a plan? You would punch holes in it all day long. They're going to do the same to you, rightfully so. So you need to go there prepared to defend your position. Go there loaded for buckshot. Have your documentation saying that you're qualified on every weapon system known to man. Take them out to a couple of...
And you can do day and night iterations with those weapons.
Yep. Take them out. Take your battalion commander out sometime and show him a sticks lane.
Yeah, don't
create one.
Just don't take him to the range. He's going to be like, wow, snipers can shoot really far in decent windy conditions.
Nope.
But there's all that planning that goes into it, and he has to see that first.
The old school EIB method of 30,000 stations, and you have to pass each one, that's a sticks lane. It's too easy to set up sticks lanes, make your guys go through it. They look good. Show the battalion commander. They look great. Now you've got his attention. Move forward with from there. It's simple things like that that get you good missions and keep you from being a designated rifleman.
Or a personal security attachment.
Oh, God.
Or watching over a four-day intersection for no reason. So, anyway, gentlemen and ladies, I appreciate your time here on the podcast. We'll be having some stuff for you guys here coming up soon. So, with that being said, from the tall grass, one shot,
one kill.
Have a good night.